Thank you very much. Good day, everybody, and welcome to the conference call on our preliminary results for 2018 for both the Sartorius Group as well as for Sartorius Tele Biotech. As always, I would like to kick off our call here with talking about the highlights for the year 2018. I will turn the call over to Rainer, our CFO, who will walk you through the figures in more detail. Then I will talk about the outlook at the end of the presentation about the group, and then also will explain the results for SSB to you. Let's have a brief look on the highlights for fiscal 2018. We have been able to achieve double-digit growth rates for sales as well as order intake and also earnings. Particularly the Bioprocess Solutions division was contributing through very dynamic, profitable growth ahead of the initial expectations at the beginning of the year 2018, and also order intake was quite strong. The Lab Products and Services division had to operate in a more challenging environment, particularly from the second half of last year onwards. In light of these circumstances, I think the development can be called a robust one. For 2019, we see a couple of macroeconomic challenges ahead, but nevertheless have a quite optimistic outlook for the year that we have entered 4 weeks ago. With that, I would like to turn over to Rainer.
Yes. Thank you, Joachim. Also welcome and good afternoon from my side. Let's jump to some key figures. We finished the year with sales revenues amounting to 1.56 billion, which is an increase in constant currencies of 13.2%. Really another strong performance for the overall Sartorius Group. Roughly one percentage point of that growth is attributed to non-organic sales. The order intake, we could increase by 12.5% in constant currencies to 1.66 billion, which is nice because we could really see that we kept the spread of roughly 100 million between revenue and order intake. The strong sales performance led to an EBITDA of 405 million, which is an increase of 14.7% and translates to a margin of 25.9%. This is really an increase of 0.8 percentage points. I have to say that really foreign exchange did not play any major role in 2018 for those results. Underlying earnings per share for the ordinary shares are 2.56 euros, and for the preferred ones, 0.01 more, 2.57 euros. If we look how is the regional development on the next slide, we're really happy with our strong performance in the Americas. One of the strongest gains with 16.6%, we could achieve revenues of 520 million and really had a nice momentum versus, we have to be honest here though, moderate comps in 2017. Remember there in 2017, we had some temporary effects in that region. In EMEA, we posted revenues of 657.7 million. It's an increase of 9.4% in constant currencies, really driven by a very robust performance on the Bioprocess Solutions side. There we could achieve double-digit growth, but that was diluted a little bit by really softer LPS growth, which was below our expectations. I will comment on that later when we go a little bit more in detail to the divisional results. In Asia Pacific, both divisions again posted very solid growth rates, double digit in lab as well as in bioprocess. That, we have to say, against fairly high comps compared to the previous year. In the regional distribution, we have actually a slight shift in favor of the Americas compared to 2017. There we have a revenue share now of 33%, EMEA at 42%, still remains, of course, our strongest region. In Asia Pacific, same sales ratio of 25% as in the previous year. If you go on the next slide, we see a bit more details about the Bioprocess Solutions division. Order intake as well as sales revenue, both all regions really contributed double digit. Order intake increased by 14.9% in constant currencies to 1.23 billion, and which is really driven by equipment, but also strongly by our single-use product portfolio. The U-Metrics acquisition contributed half a percentage point to the sales growth. Revenues rose to 1.14 billion. It's an increase of 14.8% in constant currencies, and it's right really in line with our guidance, which we really quantified a little bit more on Q3, that we would hit the upper range between 12 and 15%. So we're very happy with that performance. Underlying EBITDA, we could increase our margin from 28% to 28.6% to roughly 327 million, which increase of 15.7%. Also here, foreign exchange really only played a very minor effect, roughly 0.1 percentage point. The nice profitability is clearly attributed to economies of scale, which we continue to see throughout the year, and expect also to see that going forward, but that one will Joachim will explain at the end. If we move to the LPS division on the next slide, we see here a solid performance. Although we have to say it is below expectations. As you remember, in Q3, we changed our guidance from 12 to 15 to 8 to 10%, so we were able to hit right in the middle. Sales revenue increased in constant currencies by 9.1% to 423 million, really attributed to the weakening, to the weaker, I have to say, economy in Europe. And let's not forget, we had fairly tough comps in 2017. Order intake increased to 428.8 million by 6.3% in constant currencies. Overall, solid performance. Just as a note, the Essen Bioscience acquisition contributed as planned 2.5 percentage points to the revenue growth. Also in the LPS side, we could increase our EBITDA margin from 18 to 18.5%, as we expected it and revised our guidance on Q3. So EBITDA is at 78.1 million, an increase of 10.4%. Mainly, the increase is also attributed here to the economies of scales and also favorable product mix. If you go on to the next slide, you're going to see some additional key performance indicators based on the strong operational performance on the underlying EBITDA and 405 million. It's an increase of 14.7%. We clearly see here quite a big deviation on the extraordinary items. Let me explain that. That is really includes a positive effect resulting from the cancellation of the liability in connection with the modified agreement in the cell culture media business, basically with our partner Lonza. This amounted approximately to 30 million. Financial end result, you see a slight increase here. This is really mainly driven by the hedge accounting. We had some negative foreign exchange effects in this position. Otherwise, from an interest point of view, this is really on previous year level. Underlying profit rose by almost 22% to 175.6 million, and the net profit by 23.2% to 141 million, so very strong earnings. The net operating cash flow increased by 18.4% to 244 million, which we're very happy with. And investing cash flow was 242 million, which obviously translated, and we expected it also in the guidance, that our investment ratio would add up around 15%. We basically achieved at the end of the year 15.2% of revenue. On the next slide, we see our key financial indicators. Equity ratio again increased as we expected, 38.5%, and our dynamic indebtedness ratio went slightly below previous year, also expected to 2.4, and net debt is roughly 960 million. And with that, I'll pass on the word to Joachim again.
Thank you, Rainer.
On the next and last chart on the Sartorius Group, I would like to present the outlook for 2019 to you. The format, I think, is very familiar to you. On the left side, you see the key performance figures for the year 2018, and on the right side then in the orange box, the set of figures for 2019. I would like to start from the bottom with the Lab Products and Service business. Here we expect a top-line growth in constant currencies between 5% and 9%. Of course, this division is to some extent dependent on the overall economic development. Clearly, as we have touched upon before, we do see a weakening economy, particularly in Europe, but not only. I think all of us and all of you are aware of the signals that one can hear and read regarding the Chinese economy, but also maybe the U.S. one. We will see within the next couple of weeks how the guidances for that economy will look like. That's clearly something that will play a role here to some extent, and that is why we expect 5%-9%, which should translate into a performance ahead of the markets probably, but yet maybe a little bit below the longer year average that we would normally expect. Definitely, of course, a little bit difficult to factor that in precisely at the beginning of the year, also taking into account such aspects as a potential hard Brexit that is very difficult to quantify, both in regards to the extent of a potential impact as well as the timing effects that this might have. That is how we see that. We factored this economic environment in as far as possible, but of course, there are always some risks remaining. For the EBITDA margin for Lab Products and Services, we expect an increase up to slightly above of 20.0%. What is very important here is to note, and you see this in the second bullet point below the table, that this has two elements. One is an operational increase that we would expect to come in at around half percentage point, and then an effect which comes from the first time mandatory application of the International Accounting Standard IFRS 16 on leases, which basically leads to a reclassification or a different classification going forward of payments on leases as depreciation, partially at least in a short format. Therefore, we expect the EBITDA margin as stated here at slightly above 20%. For Bioprocess Solutions, we expect a top-line growth of between 8%-12%. Here, we have factored in a dilution of around 3 percentage points, presumably, following the modification of the agreement with Lonza regarding cell culture media. We have communicated this one 2 months ago, roughly, and explained that we are expecting around 40 million euros of reduction of our business in the cell culture media domain because this might be executed directly through Lonza going forward. Therefore, this then would mean that we have this dilution effect of roughly 3 percentage points. Margin-wise, as you can read here, we expect an EBITDA margin of slightly above 29.5%. Again, the operational increase should be half a percentage point and the remainder coming from IFRS 16, as mentioned before. For the group, that sums up then to a top-line growth expectation of 7%-11% in constant currencies and to a underlying EBITDA margin of slightly above 27.0%. Here, the effect from the modification of the agreement with Lonza plays a role of around 2 percentage points of top-line growth dilution. The CapEx ratio, as we always talked about in numerous conversations throughout the last two, three years, we expect to go down again now. We expect this figure to be around 12 percentage points 12% for the year 2019, after a good 15% in 2018. By far the majority of the massive expansion of our facility in Puerto Rico has been finalized, but of course some remaining work still has to be performed here. The same is for the significant expansion and consolidation of our site here in Germany, and then there are of course some other expansions, as you can imagine, when you are growing around the 10% mark. Having said that, I would like to move forward by briefly walk you through the figures for Sartorius State and Biotech. Of course, most comments are pretty much those that you have heard from Rainer before regarding the bioprocess division. So therefore, just briefly, we have seen a very dynamic profitable growth for Sartorius State and Biotech, of course, in light of a more moderate, particularly sales revenue performance last year. Order intake wasn't that bad. So therefore, that we have achieved 14.2% for order intake is, I would say, a remarkable increase. But also 13.7% for sales revenue is absolutely in line with our significantly upgraded guidance for SSB. And the absolute figures, I think, are important to note that around 95 million euros of higher order intake that we have achieved in comparison to the sales revenue level. Over proportionate increase of the EBITDA margin, of the EBITDA figure, and therefore an expansion of our margin up to 28.2%. Very significant increase of our earnings per share by 21.5% to €2.38. And then, as I said before, the comments regarding economies of scale, etc., I think we have talked about before. From a regional perspective, also here, I think most has been said, particularly a strong performance in the Americas against a bit more moderate comps, but nevertheless a clear outperformance of the market, because the moderate comps were due also for our competition that have faced basically the same conditions last year. So I think we continue to outperform here and gain market share in that region, as we are explicitly are shooting for. But also the performance in the more mature market of Europe has been very solid, as well as the growth in Asia Pacific against more challenging comps. The cash flow figures look, I would say, very healthy. We have been able to convert our very positive trend and development regarding the EBITDA into a significant increase of our net operating cash flow. The comment regarding the extraordinaries, I think, have been made. Don't need to add to that. Our CapEx ratio has seen a peak, as we expect, in 2018 at 14.5% approx, a bit above the year 2017, because of the very significant investments in Puerto Rico, which are part of the which is part of the SSB operations. The financial position for SSB remains extraordinarily strong, with an equity ratio of now at 66.5% and a net debt to underlying EBITDA of still around 0.4, even though we were executing this very ambitious CapEx program. Finally, the outlook for 2019, and again, of course, I think the comments have been made, basically. We are expecting to achieve 7 to 11% top-line growth for SSB, which includes a dilution by 3 percentage points following the modification of the agreement with Lonza. We expect to increase our underlying EBITDA margin in line with what we have shown before for BPS by slightly more than 1 percentage point. And the CapEx ratio we expect to also be below the figure for 2018, and for SSB we expect that to come in at around 11%. And once again, let me say that the increase of the underlying EBITDA margin should include, or should consist of, 0.5 percentage point of operational increase, and the remainder following IFRS 16's first-time application. Thank you very much for your attention so far, and now we would like to open Q&A.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star followed by two. If you're using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selection. Anyone who has a question may press star followed by one at this time. The first question is from the line of Petrina Carcata from UBS. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Petrina Carcata from UBS. I have two questions, please. The 2.4 debt to EBITDA ratio implies a cash outflow of around 50 million. So you've given us your Q4 CapEx number. If we assume low debt repaid or raised, this would imply a weak Q4 in terms of net cash flow from operating activities. Can you comment on that? And then second, your BPS guidance of 8 to 12%, which is already impacted by the loans agreement, suggests acceleration over 2018. Where is that acceleration coming from? And any inorganic addition? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for these questions. So for the cash flow in Q4, that's quite right. It's not that untypical given the fact that we had a very strong Q4 and therefore a certain tendency to higher accounts receivables also. So typically that is a, you know, kind of whatever timing effect of you know, delivering goods and then the reception of the payments. Absolutely nothing, you know, extraordinary behind that, just normal course of business and timing. And regarding the guidance for 2019, I would say what we are basically saying with 8 to 12% after a dilution of these 3 percentage points, and given the fact that what we have achieved in 2018 was more or less completely organic growth, what we are saying is that we expect pretty much a continuation of the organic growth trend from 18 into 19. We see that well backed by the development of our orders, as we have highlighted as well. So there's no, therefore, no change of any particular trend in. Maybe if I may add one word on timing here, but that is already, you know, in one level more into the details. When we compare the quarters in 2018, we would say that Q1 was a little bit, let's say, less strong in comparison to quite strong, and even stronger other quarters. Maybe that's the right wording. So maybe this growth rate might be, could be coming in even a little bit at the upper end or even higher for Q1. Let's see. It's a bit early to say that, but that could be the case, and a little bit lower then logically for the other quarters. But again, that is nothing that I would recommend to interpret much into. That is simply a little bit, again, you know, the normal slight fluctuations. But again, the basis of our expectation, or more or less the result from our in-depth planning, is basically that we expect the continuation of the organic growth trend.
Thank you.
Next question is from the line of Marcus Gola from MainFirst Bank. Please go ahead.
My first one would be a follow-up on BPS. Could you elaborate a bit on the process, how you compile your guidance for this segment? So how much visibility do you actually have on consumables orders for the year when you provide a guidance? And could you give us any indication, or or do you get any indication from the magnitude of orders or equipment orders you get from your clients in the beginning of the year? So basically, you just simply want to check how robust your guidance assumptions are, because it sounds a bit that you got some kind of exceptional, maybe exceptional strong Q1 order book. I just wanted to know what you see for the rest of the year. And my second question is generally a follow-up on your macro view. You mentioned that a hard Brexit could have some adverse impact on your guidance. So is it fair to say that your current outlook for 2019 is based on the assumption that the macroeconomic environment will not further deteriorate from here and hence will remain stable? And then my last question is on the cell media business. Will you retreat from that business now, or what is your approach to win back market share here? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. So first on the visibility, of course, the visibility for the first quarter is quite high given the order book and simply the nature of our business. Of course, it's difficult to precisely predict the growth rate at this point in time. But of course, yeah, given the nature of the business and the order book, that is, the visibility there is quite high. And then, quite frankly, we often like to say that it's easier to predict our growth rate over 3 years than over three quarters, because of the visibility, or let's say even the commitment of customers at the beginning of a year, you know, regarding the orders that they might place in September or October or so, is limited. So therefore, there's always a kind of uncertainty, of course, it's in the nature of this business, and I guess of any business. So I would say we do have a very high visibility and robustness because of the fact that we do have a very significant portion, 75% approx, of single-use products and therefore repetitive business. But even if this accounts for like 90% of what we can expect, of course, there's still then the uncertainty regarding the remaining 10% and when precisely they will come in. And that then, of course, leads to also a certain bandwidth within our guidance. And sometimes, as we have seen in the last couple of years, that we sometimes had to adjust our guidance by some percentage points in the further course of the year. So I think we would never try to give the impression as if that was kind of perfect visibility at the beginning of a year, but we try to factor in as many information available as possible from all our direct interactions with customers globally, be it key accounts, be it smaller customers, on all levels. So we really have a very sound budgeting process here that is the basis for our forecasting. But of course, there's always a certain uncertainty included, partially also because our customers have to live with a certain uncertainty. They also don't know precisely if, and if yes, when they might get the approval for a new drug, for instance, and that can have an impact of, let's say, one percentage point of growth. It's not a question of life or death for our business, absolutely not, but of course it has an impact on growth and when exactly it happens. So that's basically on that. On the macro environment, Brexit, so we do not expect the Brexit to and the potential hard Brexit to change our business that we operate by ourselves in the UK or that we have with UK customers fundamentally. However, it clearly might have an impact on supply chains one way or the other. And we have prepared ourselves for that, as I think most companies do, by building up certain safety stock levels. But I think we all know that this is a situation that is pretty much potentially, at least, new for everybody, and that there are potentially not sufficient resources and defined processes available to operate in a maybe abruptly, fundamentally changed environment. So that is an uncertainty. I think it's only fair and reasonable to address that. but it's clearly there are limits to predicting that and factoring that into our guidance. And therefore, I think it's largely right how you have like summarized it, that what can be seen today and what is reflected in also those outlooks on GDP growth, etc., that are publicly available for all the different regions of the world, we have tried to factor into our guidance. If things, you know, develop differently from that, then of course this might have an impact on our business development. On the cell culture media, the modification of the agreement with Lonza basically means that both companies, Lonza and Sartorius Stadium Biotech, now have both operationally and strategically all freedom to operate, because basically we have removed the exclusivity, the mutual exclusivity, the bidirectional exclusivity, so to say, from our agreement. And we clearly believe that after having shown that we are absolutely able to grow such business and to basically triple it within like 3 years, and seeing the synergies that we can create for customers and the attractivity that we have for, you know, that we could create in front of customers by having that in our portfolio, is something that we want to continue. And therefore, we are working on potential ways to build up in more or less fully owned cell culture media business within our portfolio. But of course, here it's much more important, as with any other business developments that we are undertaking, that the quality and the sustainability is the first factor that we want to maintain and have an eye on, then speed. We still have access to the cell culture media from Lonza, so we are able to serve our customers. There is no rush that we are in here, but I could definitely imagine that in the longer run or in the midterm, however we would like to call that now, we will build up one way or the other an own cell culture media business.
Very helpful. Thank you so much.
Next question is from Paul Knight from Janney.com. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning and congratulations on the year end.
Thank you.
The question I have is regarding Essen instruments. The growth contribution there was, what, 250 basis points to the year? And what's the outlook in your view to Essen? Is it reducing the level of volatility you're expecting in the instrumentation side of the business? Could you give us some update and color and your view on what Essen does, and is Essen taking some share?
Yeah, definitely. So our bioanalytics business or cell analytics business, of which Essen is the larger part, and the other business is, or the other part is the IntelliSite business, have led, I think, to a certain shift of our overall growth rate in the LPS division, as well as regarding our profitability. And that we have seen already in 2017 to some extent, and also in 2018. We do believe that the fact that we are able to grow that business significantly means that the adoption of this technology by our customers is progressing well. So in that sense, one could also say Essen and IntelliSite are taking share, even though that is that needs maybe the additional comment that basically both technologies don't have any direct competition, because there are, of course, many other cell analytical technologies available, but no automated systems that are directly comparable and competing with the two we are talking about here. Definitely it has changed the strategic positioning as well as some key operational performance factors of our lab division. Going forward, we believe that the entire segment of life science research, as we have talked about extensively in the course of these acquisitions, but also, for example, 11 months ago during our Capital Markets Day, is the key strategic direction of this division. We believe that this is an area which provides very significant growth potential, also because the companies being active here and also the academic sector being active here is a very relevant one with a lot of growth potential on the one hand, and also with a strong need for more powerful tools to perform their very demanding experiments and partially also process development undertakings. This segment of cell analytics or the broader space of bioanalytics is really a core activity that you could say that basically is taking place in all life science research labs, be it of academic nature or industrial nature. So that is how we see this segment. Of course, let me add that we are talking about systems here that are by and large cost around $100,000. I would not exclude this business from the business that is to some extent depending on, let's say, the ability of customers to make larger investments, and therefore to some extent also dependent on the macroeconomic environment. Yeah? So if we would see a very significant cutback in the U.S., in regards to the R&D spendings and the public spendings there, then that would have a certain impact here. But as we are not talking about a mature technology, but one that really making inroads, I'm not talking about that we would see a decline then in this business, but maybe a certain impact on the growth rate. But again, happy to have that in our portfolio. Has changed the performance and the strategic positioning of the division.
Thank you very much.
Next question is from the line of Oliver Reinberg from Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Oliver Reinberg from Kepler Cheuvreux. Three questions, if I may. Starting with the outlook for LPS, the outlook actually looks quite strong considering what we see in the outside world. Can you just help us to understand, if you strip out the growth for bioanalytics, what is the underlying growth rate that you applied for the rest of the activities at LPS? And is the kind of, I think, orders in Q4 were actually flat or -1%. Is that not any kind of concern for you? Secondly, I want to follow up on cash conversion. I think in Q4, the operating cash flow was actually flat year-on-year, despite the fact that the EBITDA was up 50 million. Is it purely explained by the receivables, or do you have any kind of incremental comment on that? And also in terms of cash conversion, I think for the group you were at 60%, I think for SSB at 66%, which probably would suggest that LPS is relatively weak. Can you comment around that, and also if you have any kind of cash conversion targets for the future years? And last question, can you just share with us what was the absolute number of capitalized R&D costs in the full year? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. So LPS, the growth of the non-bioanalytics business would be around the lower end of the bandwidth that we are giving. So that would be, I think, how one could capture that one, whereas the growth for the bioanalytics business would be clearly in the double-digit range, but of course that business is the smaller part of it. So therefore, that's the composition there. On the cash flow that you were asking for, you can basically say that I think, besides the effect that I was talking about before, so the receivables, I would say the other effect is that we have seen a little bit a higher CapEx towards the end of the year. So I think that's all you could see that the CapEx ratio was, I think, if I remember correctly, just around the 10% mark, slightly above 10% at the beginning of the year, and was higher during the last quarter. And that, of course, had also some impact on the cash outflow. But again, there is no, you know, there is no, when we talk about cash conversion, then I, you know, for me, that always has the notion of fundamental features of a business, and both the fact of the accounts receivables and inventories towards the end of the year, as well as the effect from the, you know, timing from certain CapEx, is nothing that I would consider to be or fundamental. And LPS, as you rightly point out, has been a bit higher impacted by that to a high extent, because if you deduct SSB from the group, then you not only have LPS, but also those kind of, you know, group overhead or support functions or global infrastructure kind of items that are carried by the headquarters and not by SSB, and therefore look like as if they were part from LPS from a cash flow point of view. And then finally, the R&D CapEx figure is a good 30 million for the year 2018.
Okay, thanks for that. If I may just follow up on cash conversion, do you have any kind of targets in mind, or is the focus for the next 2 years still on growth and less on cash conversion?
Quite frankly, we do not want now to add any KPI, let's say, through the back door now to the set of figures here. We might add that at some point in time. I think we talked that before. We said that we wouldn't do so, particularly in the course of our very significant CapEx program at the moment, but we might do that going forward. The only figure so far, and that I can also share here with you, we are still operating on average, and also on average means, you know, over the year and at the different reporting dates, but also at the end of the year, at a little bit higher net working capital figures than we are shooting for midterm. To give you a feeling for that, we are talking about, let's say, approx 100 days. By end of 2018, and we believe a more realistic figure going forward is around 90 days. We benchmark us internally in our regular reporting, and we are not doing bad at all in comparison to our competition as far as the figures are available. But nevertheless, we believe that this figure can be a little bit lower once some of the process improvements that we are working on have been introduced fully. Particularly the inventory level is a little bit higher. That doesn't result in extraordinary write-offs here. That's not our problem, but clearly we have a little bit higher inventory levels than we believe that we maybe should have in the long run. And the reason for that is mainly that we want to make sure at the moment to keep our delivery times short enough to satisfy our customers, which in some product segments has been a challenge, because in some product segments we were growing 25% or even stronger, and here clearly we then have decided for a more risk-averse approach to our net working capital. So that's nothing that explains Q4. For Q4, I gave you the explanation, but in general, that is something that we would say. And if we add some more cash flow related KPIs to the set of figures going forward, that's well possible. But as I said, that we might do after the completion of our CapEx program.
That's very helpful indeed. So may I sneak in the last question on the IFRS change? I think you have like 60-70 basis points of margin support. what is the offsetting nature of that? So what absolute euro amount in terms of D&A should we expect, and anything else that we should consider below EBITDA?
Yeah, what basically happens is that, you know, let's say costs that have been part of the P&L before are now split into depreciation and to some extent interest. The capitalization of the utilization rights of such leasing objects. So the balance sheet gets a little bit longer, and therefore there's slight dilution of the equity ratio. So and then of course you have the depreciation on this on these utilization rights on the leasing objects, and again largely becoming depreciation, to some extent becoming interest. So the majority is always on par with, let's say, the accounting world before on the EBIT level, and it's fully on par with the world before on the net result level.
Perfect. Thanks so much.
Welcome.
Next question is from Daniel Wendorf from Commerzbank. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my questions. Two, if I may. The first one is on the BPS division. When you think of your single-use component sales, can you potentially quantify on the performance of how many compounds does this sales line depend? A ballpark number here would certainly help, in my view. The second question is on the LPS division. Is it potentially possible to split out the percentage of revenues from the LPS division really depending on the weak economy, i.e. The percentage of sales going into the chemical industry, the percentage of revenues potentially going just to academic research, which to my understanding is not necessarily depending on the European economy in the first place, and how much of the LPS revenues really go into bioanalytics products. That would also be very helpful. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. So actually, to report on the number of compounds, or if I understand that correctly, pharmaceutical products that our products are used for, is a figure that we don't report. It would be a very, very high number, and clearly also a number that is basically getting bigger and bigger, because there are much more additional products being produced at this point in time than maybe products where the manufacturing or the production is discontinued by customers. But again, we would not disclose that figure, partially, to be honest, also because we would not have a very precise grip on it anyways, because the level of insight that we get by our customers is different. But we also believe that we would not like to share too much information here with the public world, to which not only nice investors and analysts belong, but also competition. So therefore, bear with us that we would not share that figure. Mm-hmm. And on LPS, we would say that the bioanalytics business roughly accounts for something like around the 20% mark of our business. The life science research segment as a customer segment or application kind of area, roughly for 50%. That includes both biopharma as well as life science research academics customers, and then the remaining 50% are basically other areas from chemical industry through environmental labs, diagnostic labs partially, food and beverage, and so on. So and even quality assurance in pharma, so to say, is not belonging to life science research. So that's roughly how we would say that. And if you carve out academia overall, which is not entirely but predominantly life science research mm-hmm. academia, then we would say academia is around 20%.
Okay, thank you very much.
Different dimensions now, yeah, that I've shared with you, but that is roughly the set of figures.
Yeah, that is already very helpful. Maybe I can sneak in a follow-up question as well on the visibility then for your single-use revenue stream in BPS. What percentage of your revenues is roughly visible beyond 3 months? Can you quantify this? Are you
yeah.
willing to share it?
Yeah, yeah. I tried to explain that before, but maybe I failed in doing that in a good way. The way how we look on it is basically that in a little bit simplified way now, you could say that if I simplify extremely, I would say all of the existing single-use business is recurring. Yeah? So if we made 100 in a given time, we will in a given quarter, we will also make 100 in the next quarter. The only question is how much more will we make? Simplified model now, okay? So then you understand why I say well, for us it's we don't have typically the question of will we grow the business, as you know. The question is rather, will we grow 5%, 10%, 15%? And that is to some extent depending on timing. Yeah? Even if we are quite sure that we will do another X million with customer ABC, whatever, yeah, we not always know precisely when we will get the business, because in quite some cases the customer doesn't know exactly when he will be able to expand his manufacturing or even start his manufacturing, because he is dependent from, for instance, new approvals or whatsoever. So that's a bit, of course, it's a simplification. I leave out any potential impacts on fluctuating stock levels at customers and what have you, yeah, but it's not that far from reality.
Very good. Thank you very much. That was helpful.
The next question is from Gunnar Romar from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone. Gunnar Romar, Deutsche Bank. Just a bigger picture question on your sales composition in BPS. Just curious if you can comment on the split between originator and biosimilar customers in the current sales, but also probably more importantly, when it comes to the acquisition of new businesses. I would assume that share goes up, so the biosimilar shares go up, but it would be great if you can add some color around that. And then with regard to your BPS outlook, can you comment on the expectations by region in 2019? Is this in line with the trends you're seeing also longer term? Is there anything we need to take into account specifically for 2019? So any color around that would be very helpful. Thanks.
Yeah, so on the biosimilar business, I think your remark from a qualitative standpoint is absolutely correct. The business is becoming more relevant for us to date. It accounts for upper single digit figures of our sales revenues in BPS. It's a bit to a higher extent affected by equipment sales, or at least that has been the case recently, because quite a larger portion is, the investment by customers into building up capacities, and then naturally you have a higher level of equipment being part of such orders. And also I think this is, as we all know, it's an early stage of the biosimilar business. The first wave of approvals I think we have seen or are seeing maybe we're already seeing now the beginning of the second wave. Let's see, but still it's not on a little bit more flattened, quite increasing, but not so strongly fluctuating path than the originators business. So having said all that, we believe it clearly will play a double-digit role going forward, but that will, you know, take maybe a couple of more years until this will account 15% or maybe then in the longer run also more than that percentage, which is quite normal given the fact that that we are in an industry where things are not changing from one day to the other. Approvals take some time. We also see different speeds of approving biosimilars in different countries, just as we have seen it with the generics business a couple of decades back. That also didn't happen all at the same time in all countries. So, again, between 5 and 10% to date, getting into the double-digit region within the next few years. That is, I think, what we can see so far. On your second point, we don't give a detailed quantitative guidance for the regions, but what we see is that we should expect higher growth rates from Asia and the Americas in comparison to Europe. That is the typical pattern in normal years, and in that regard, we would expect a normal year 2019. In the Americas, this is driven by a healthy underlying market growth plus us continuing to gain market share. And in Asia, we expect a quite overproportionate growth of those markets. Of course, quite to some extent fueled by China, but also other markets growing quite nicely, India, Korea, Singapore also to some extent a little bit different drivers. So that is how we would expect 2019 to look like.
That's helpful. Thank you. And just a last question. Can you talk about your exposure, if at all, currently to gene and viral therapy?
So the exposure that we have here is in the lower to mid-single-digit percentage rate in comparison to our turnover. It's relatively small. Yet, it's, of course, a very interesting business. It's also a growing business. But as we all know, with basically one exception, depending on how you look on it, it's a business that is largely taking place in R&D labs, maybe partially in process development labs and somewhere in between. So therefore, nothing large scale, if that is the right way to look on it anyways. So a business that we are focusing on in a certain way by making sure that we understand the special needs of these customers, where we are also looking into what that potentially means for our product portfolio going forward. So far we don't have any products that are just like tailor-made for such customers and for such applications. So all our sales today are sales of existing products into that applications. But again, going forward, we could imagine very well that plays a bigger role.
That's helpful. Thank you.
We have a follow-up question from the line of Marcus Gola from MainFirst Bank. Please go ahead.
Yes, thanks for taking my follow-up. It's on the EPS adjustment. So the difference between the IFRS number and the adjusted number is quite high, and I wanted to ask whether you can provide some color on the nature of these adjustments and whether the difference will come down anytime soon. Thank you.
We typically have a, you mean earnings per share or net result basically, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so we always apply the same logic, and that is also part of what our auditors look on, just to make that clear. And what we do here is that we correct for the depreciation of non-tangible assets, basically.
Amortization,
exactly, that is the word that I was looking for. So amortization, we are normalizing also tax rates, which, but that has no effect basically for 2018 because our de facto tax rate was pretty much our normalized tax rate. But the bigger effect is the amortization that we are correcting for. And amortization, of course, plays a certain role after all the acquisitions of the recent years, but always the same way how we apply. We also correct for the non-operational expenses, but they have been rather small this year, so that's not such a big effect. And the reason why we do so, by the way, just as a recap, because we do that for many years now already, is that we wanted to provide a net result figure that is closer to a, let's say, cash relevant figure, and again more and corrected for non-operational and non-recurring effects, be it on the tech side, be it on the business side. But the difference, I think, is a quite standard one for us.
Okay, thank you.
There are no further questions at this time, and I would like to hand back to Dr. Joachim Kreitzberg for closing comments. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I think I just want to thank all of you again for your interest in Sartorius and Sartorius Stadium Biotech and for the discussion that we had here today. I'm very much looking forward to our next interactions, be it on some conferences, individual calls, or in roughly 3 months' time when we have the opportunity to report on our Q1 2019 figures. Thanks again. Have a good day. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.